This week, the new and deeply fractured National Assembly passed the Emergency Purchasing Power Bill, aimed at countering still-rising, once-in-a-generation inflation. At just 20 billion euros, it has been widely criticized as an ineffective and even superficial measure.
For many people, this bill is insufficient in comparison with the scope of the crisis. The same criticism has been made of a government fuel rebate of 18 cents, which began in April. However, it is 20 billion euros which will help the poorest level of society and students deal with the effects of high inflation.
France's government claims that upcoming austerity rollbacks, planned for the pension and unemployment system, will actually produce broad economic growth this time. The European Central Bank is raising interest rates, even though the Eurozone is already on the brink of recession. Sanctions and not diplomacy continues to be the destabilizing Western choice regarding Ukraine. The long-term economic outlook for France and the Eurozone appears bleak to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thousands of Palestinians took part in funeral processions of Mohammed Azizi, 25, and Abdurrahman Subh, 28, who were killed early Sunday during an Israeli military raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus and its old town. The Fatah Armed Wing Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade says the two Palestinians were its members, while the Israeli military says the operation in Nablus was launched to apprehend armed suspects. Following the raid, a general strike called across Nablus to mourn the death of the two Palestinians.
The operation this time was more violent than the previous ones. Clashes were heavy as Israeli soldiers raided the neighborhood from all sides. Live ammunition and rockets were fired towards the houses. I believe such ammunition are only used in wars between countries.
Israeli forces raided Al-Yasamin neighborhood and surrounded a house, which the regime said Palestinian fighters had barricaded themselves in. Eyewitnesses described the raid as a full-blown military invasion, while the Palestinian Red Crescent reported 19 injuries, including 10 people, hit by live fire. The Palestinian leadership has condemned the operation, with a spokesman of the Palestinian president saying the Israeli crime will not defeat the Palestinians and will not break their will.
It's a barbaric act. It's another crime committed by the Israeli forces. They fired rockets at a house and they knew people were inside it. Two young men were killed and many others were wounded. It's obvious that the entire region will remain in a circle of violence until the occupation ends.
At least 52 Palestinians have been killed since late March, as Israel has intensified its aggression after a wave of deadly anti-Israel operations that led to the killing of Israeli soldiers. The Israeli military has never stopped its raids in the occupied West Bank. Such operations have often led to the death and injury of Palestinians, like what happened in Nablus. Regardless of how many people are killed or injured in the raids, Palestinians say resistance is their only option until they free the occupied territories. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
We all remember her from pictures. At the time that her father was assassinated, Armita Razai Nejad was only 5. Her mother, Shohra Pirani, was also wounded in the attack. Today, her story has found its way on the silver screen, revealing new dimensions of how Dariush Razai Nejad was martyred. What made the ordeal even tougher was the fact that Dariush was shot right in front of his wife and his 5-year-old daughter. The international community, human rights advocates, and even the UN remained silent. This prompted Shohra Pirani to write a letter to then-US Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, denouncing in the strongest terms the assassination of researchers and scientists. Her move inspired a group of filmmakers to make a movie based on the story.
About 5 or 6 years ago, we decided to make this movie. I believe that as filmmakers, we had a responsibility to do so.
This is a very important part of our contemporary history. It's a story that just had to be told. It should have been done sooner.
I was preoccupied by this incident for years.
How can you kill someone right in front of his 5-year-old kid? I did some research, and as soon as the opportunity came up, we decided to make the movie.
Hanas, which literally means breath, is a biopic that dramatizes the story of Dariush Reza-i Nejad, a nuclear scientist that was assassinated in 2011.
This movie is actually a document that shows how Iran has been a victim of terror attacks. There aren't many countries in which such brutal terror attacks have happened. The assassination of a scientist and researcher while his family is watching.
This was a very educational movie showing us the animosity of Israel and the United States.
I found it to be an educational movie, both important and interesting.
I learned a lot. It was very interesting.
The feminine touch has turned this biopic into a must-see, and now, in an open letter, Armita has called on all foreign ambassadors in Iran to watch the movie, too.
In the words of Armita, the daughter of the martyred scientist Dariush Reza-i Nejad, Iranian or non-Iranian, everyone should watch this movie just to catch a glimpse of the atrocities and human rights violations that are committed against the Iranian people, while the international community remains silent. Kisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
South Korean peace activists gathered at Imjingak, a peace park near the border with North Korea, to call for an official declaration to end the 1950-53 Korean War. They also want the agreements made during previous inter-Korean summits to be upheld.
Let's join together, 80 million people for peace. Let's get together, people for peace around the world. Let's start today the great journey of marking the 70th anniversary of the armistice. Next year, the year of the end of the war and the first year of the peace agreement.
Peace activists traveled in groups from across South Korea to join the event. Former President Moon Jae-in had sought engagement with North Korea, but his push for an inter-Korean peace failed to materialize. Participants here want results.
We gathered here because everyone wants to keep a state of peace in the middle of this tension. We hope this will expand and be transmitted to the so-called politicians in South Korea and the world, so that peace can be achieved politically.
We believe that, after all, politicians have some responsibility for the Korean Peninsula issue, but our citizens need to show some of the world's political leaders that the general public wants an end to the Korean War.
The Korean peace appeal seeks 100 million signatures to deliver to the United Nations and the warring parties next year. New South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol is taking a hard line with North Korea, boosting the country's military and strengthening its alliance with the United States, with joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises planned for next month. Advocates for peace, like those gathered here today, have an uphill battle. Frank Smith, South Korea.
A gathering of Lebanese journalists and activists was held in the South Lebanon town of Naqoura to protest against Israel's extraction activities in the disputed waters.
We are so powerful, we can fight, we can go to war in case the enemy wants a war, unless we get our rights and our wealth in the sea and on the land.
Former head of the Lebanese negotiating team told Press TV that any negotiator should use all sources of power in his hands to strengthen their position facing the other party.
One of the strongest points is the resistance and the position of the resistance in the negotiation of for asking for getting what is right for Lebanon.
The speakers believe that Israeli attempts to drill in disputed waters could escalate the current status quo.
The Lebanese community and the media community is behind the Lebanese negotiation and behind the Lebanese resistance to confirm our right and in our wealth.
Within the presence of the resistance as well as the army of Lebanon and the people who refuse such aggression, because we believe that this act is already an aggression against Lebanon, and we have all the right to give a response to it, whether it is a legal response or any form of diplomatic or political or any form of response within our power of nation.
We came here, Lebanese government and people and press, to make the line and the point that this is our land and this is our sea and this is our sky.
Israeli caretaker Minister Yair Lapid has told U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein that he wants to make a deal with Lebanon over the disputed waters as soon as possible. This comes a week after Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said the resistance is ready for military escalation if Western pressure to prevent Lebanon from extracting its resources continues. Hochstein is expected in Beirut later in July.
We are here in Naqoura, the last Lebanese town on Lebanon's south coast. From here, at least three lines have been drawn in efforts to demarcate the maritime borders, all of which remain disputed, and nine both potentially rich in gas and petrol. But Lebanon's president, Michel Aoun, says Western pressure has hampered extraction activities. Mariam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
The notorious Ukrainian website Mirotvorets, meaning peacemaker, it publishes the names and addresses of those it deems to be enemies of Ukraine. The opening page shows pictures of dead Russian soldiers. On the list are domestic and foreign journalists, politicians and citizens that in some way they view to have aided or worked with pro-Russian forces in the country. Now, shamefully, they are adding children to the list. Faina Sevenkova, she is 13 years old, and has been writing about her experiences here in Donbass. After her name appeared on the list, she started to receive threats of physical violence online.
Are you worried about being on the website? Are you concerned that something might happen to you?
Yes, of course. A person I knew got to know my address and came to greet me for my birthday. These are good intentions, but something worse can happen. Websites like this shouldn't exist. They're illegal. They put many people in danger, children as well. I have a friend who was put on there because she wrote a poem about war.
Numerous journalists and public figures have been murdered after being put on the list, like Oles Bazina, who was shot near his home in Kiev, and Andrea Rocelli, an Italian journalist. After he was killed on the front line, the website posted liquidated over his photo. The Committee to Protect Journalists has previously written to the Ukrainian government asking them to condemn the unfounded and damaging allegations published on Mirotvorets and to clarify publicly that the Ukrainian Interior Ministry is dedicated to protecting journalists. The United Nations and Human Rights Watch have also condemned the site. Diana Spitkonen, a Finnish journalist in Donbass, he's also on the list.
It's all against all international laws, and you shouldn't have right, any country shouldn't have right to do that kind of like hunting list, kill lists of people and put it to the public, especially. It's a very brutal way how to cause people serious problems, and many have lost their lives because of being on that list.
The website clearly states it provides information for law enforcement authorities and special services. Ukrainian government ministers have praised the site, and it is actively used by the authorities to track and detain enemies of the state.
While Western media and governments try to whitewash the extremist or far-right neo-Nazi elements here in Ukraine, calling it Russian propaganda, for a website promoted, supported and used by the government that openly encourages violence towards children is a clear indication that Ukraine does have a serious problem with state-sponsored extremism.
They're basically encouraging people to kill people on the list?
Yeah. They basically, that's why I've been in since 2015. I certainly cannot fall to the Ukrainian hands because I am on that list with several pages even. But like the old saying is that the other one's terrorist is another one's freedom fighter. And hopefully all sense and truth and peace-loving people understand that all these people in that list are heroes.
To openly encourage violence towards children takes a special kind of evil, an evil that NATO countries, as they continue to pump Ukraine with money, weapons and political support, seem unwilling or incapable to challenge. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistant movement warning of hitting any target in the Israeli-occupied territory. Saidat Nasrallah has stressed that Hezbollah has sufficient defensive and offensive power at sea. Now, he made that warning as the Tel Aviv regime is embarking on extracting gas from disputed Karish field. And that's while the area is under dispute and there needs to be an agreement with Lebanon before any exploitation of the resources there. Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi, and these are our guests in today's episode of The Spotlight. Political analyst Karim Shahra is joining us from the Iranian city of Qom. Also with us will be manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Firas Al-Najm in Toronto.
Is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Beginning with Karim, as you know, there is this maritime dispute over a couple of blocks in the Mediterranean. The question is, how would it be possible for one party to want to start extracting natural resources of that region that is under dispute?
Well, that's the main problem, actually. That's the entire problem. The whole problem is that the Americans and Israelis are trying to pressure the Lebanese government into, first of all, accepting Israeli terms. And second of all, they're trying to delay the possible, or Lebanon's possibly benefiting from its oil and gas resources as much as possible, so as to allow the Israelis to begin extraction, while the Lebanese simply can't do anything to bring themselves out of the misfortune and the crisis they are currently living. It's actually. I have no words to describe this. I mean, this is utterly, it's not just inhumane that the Americans are putting so much pressure on Lebanon, but when finally Lebanon actually has a break and can make use of its natural resources in order to bring itself out of this crisis and bring its people a shred of hope, the Americans are just continuing to pile on more pressure and more pressure. People, I'm not sure how, look, it's like, it's exactly what the Lebanese resistance has said so far, what Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has said so far. Mm. If the Lebanese, if this pressure is meant to keep the Lebanese starving, then that's not going to happen. We will not be starved. We will, I mean, and I'm not quoting, of course, word for word, but the Israelis will be attacked, and we will not starve while the Israelis are allowed to make use of their natural resources. Okay. Or actually, they're stolen Palestinian natural resources.
Okay, now turning to Toronto, Faraz, Israel has not sufficed to its land grab policy in occupied Palestinian land. It's been violating the Lebanese and Syrian airspace and time again to launch air raids, as you know. And now it's trying to plunder other countries' resources at sea. Your take on that?
Yes. I mean, this is only natural because the Zionist regime's establishment was based on stealing and killing and, breaching international law. So it's nothing new, to be honest with you. This is the reality of the situation is that the Israeli regime will continue to violate any laws and to steal as much as they can. And this is also what Sayyid Khamenei also said about the countries that normalize with Israel, that Israel will be, taking advantage of their resources and whatever is left over in their nations. And this is what Israel does from the beginning. It does this inside the land of Palestine that's occupied. We see that, they have so much different areas that they've already controlled and took over. And they're building more and more settlements, and they're even going into the West Bank and trying to take places. And even inside Jerusalem, Sheikh Jarrah and all these different areas, they keep taking more houses and kicking people out of their houses. And it was clear when that video came out and went out viral when that guy, the neighbor, Jacob, came outside and said that if I don't steal your house, somebody else is going to steal it. So, I mean, this is the nature of the Zionist regime and the Zionist community. Even here in Canada, they act like this, they think like this, they talk like this. When we face off with them in protests and stuff like that, we see that clearly that their mentality anywhere in the world is the same. And that's the problem is because the West gave them a green light to break all the laws and not punish them and penalize them. The United Nations sits there idly watching all these crimes committed, and there's no real punishment, there's no sanctions, there's nothing. And the Israelis now anywhere in the world think that they're above the law and that they can do anything. And this is the problem. And, Hezbollah and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah will not be silent and will not sit idly while the Israelis try to plunder their resources, at this moment.
Yeah. Okay, Karim, let's now talk a little bit about Hezbollah's drone and missile capability. You know, Hezbollah is saying it's able to hit any target in Israel using its own missiles and drones. Your thoughts on that?
Well, actually, this is something that has caused a bit of a ruckus and a lot of confusion within the Israeli military establishment and intelligence establishment. Because, first of all, Hezbollah's drone capabilities have significantly grown over the years. And so have their missile capabilities, and especially their precision missile capabilities. And so they've been trying to, they and the Americans have been trying to send, the Americans mostly, of course, the Israelis through the Americans, have been trying to send a lot of missives throughout the years to Hezbollah to get them to either back down from their missile capabilities, and try to give them some concessions in return, but they would not have this, of course, because there's no dealing with the Israelis. I mean, the only language they understand, and so anything that we have gotten so far in Lebanon has been through our use of force. Diplomacy has been utterly unsuccessful with us getting any shred of sovereignty back from the Israelis. So if we just look back at the few months that have passed so far, we can see that the Israelis are not only worried about Hezbollah's drone capabilities. In fact, during their most recent war games close to the north and on the borders with Lebanon, this reflects the state of confusion and the state of constant stress that they're living. I mean, they figured that one of their drones was one of Hezbollah's. They had no idea that this was one of their own drones. And in their state of confusion, they shot at their own drones and even failed to down that same drone, which is theirs.
Right.
The utter state of confusion in Israel and the utter state of fear that they're living because of Hezbollah's advancement in the drone and precision missile field is something that we've never seen before, not to this extent.
Okay.
And this, I believe, reflects the state of easiness or the state of ease that the how sure the resistance is of its capabilities when it's dealing with a with an enemy that's so afraid of growing power and its growing potential.
Right. Okay, for us, what about these differences that there are between the Lebanese side and the Israelis regarding this border demarcation and this maritime dispute? What does it take to remove those differences and come to an agreement? Is that possible?
I mean, this is up to the the United Nations if they put pressure and they really want this to be solved, right? If they give the Zionist regime, the open space to and delay the process and play games so Israel can actually plunder the resources and steal the resources, then we're not going to come down to a resolution. And this is the main point. And as it seems, even the person that they used, and appointed to be the mediator between the Lebanese government and the Zionist regime is a Zionist himself. So he's really looking out for the Zionist interests, and he's probably working on the strategy of what the Zionists want. He's not looking for the interest of both parties or, for world peace or for the United Nations Charter of Rights and stuff like this. It seems like the person is himself, as I was reading, I remember reading that he also was part of the IDF at a certain point. So this is obviously not the right person to be appointed in this process. Mm-hmm. As it seems, it's Israel are already, they've already have their ships over there. I think they are cooperating and collaborating with some kind of Greek company that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has warned them to pull out. So they're already, I think, in the process of, they've already breached the law. They've already, they didn't care about this negotiation, because if they did, everything would be pulled back. And once the negotiation has been complete and they've got down to an agreement, then the next process happens, whether Lebanese go to extract it or the Zionists go to extract it or so on. But right. As it seems, like I said, there's no real resolution and there's nothing that they're really working on to resolve this. So I think the resistance, and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah says that the only way forward is to, confiscate our rights. And that is by resisting and fighting. And he's giving an opportunity, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, I think, is giving a big opportunity to the Lebanese government and to the United Nations and to all the parties to get to resolve this issue before it escalates to a military confrontation. And I know that it's pretty sure that Hezbollah is ready for that. As Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in his recent interview that he had with Al-Mayadeen, and also the anniversary of the 40th year of the foundation and establishment of Hezbollah. So I think that he's ready for a big confrontation with the Zionist regime, and they know that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Karim, I want to put the same question to you. Do you believe that there is a way out of this, and this maritime dispute could be resolved? And even if it's resolved, how would you guarantee that Tel Aviv will stick to it?
Well, like your guest said, the person who's actually mediating who's mediating is Amos Hochstein. He's a famed Zionist, and he's siding with the Israelis at all times. He's constantly piling pressure on the Lebanese officials so that they would concede even more territory to the Israelis. Of course, the Lebanese officials were not about to let this happen, and Hezbollah was not about to let Lebanon's sovereignty be desecrated to such an extent.
Mm-hmm.
So the recent statements made by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah before this recent interview, before yesterday's interview, these statements actually had the Israelis begging Hochstein to come to Lebanon and try to reach a settlement with the Lebanese side. Like I said earlier, there's no way to discuss anything with the Israelis through diplomacy. Force and deterrence is the only thing that would have them, that would have us secure our rights. So when these statements were made, the Hochstein was flying to Lebanon again in order to try to broker a deal with the Lebanese, to the Lebanese's more that would fit more with our own interests. But of course, they were not going to concede all the way. And I think a large amount of the statements made by Syed Hassan Nasrallah yesterday during the interview was meant to deliver a message to the Israelis that, because look, there's a lot of information and confusion in the Israeli military and in the intelligence establishment regarding what Syed Hassan Nasrallah said. Some of them are saying that there's a lot to be worried about, and Hezbollah would definitely live up to its promises. And others are saying, well, yes, Hezbollah may have the capability, but it won't risk igniting a war on the front with, or opening a new front with Israel.
Uh-huh.
So, but even those saying that Hezbollah will not open a new front with Israel are saying that we need to be very careful because it does have the capabilities to start a new war. Mm-hmm. Even though it may not want to. So this confusion is driving Hochstein to come to Lebanon again in order to try to broker a deal with the Lebanese side. So
okay.
How will it be resolved? Hopefully it'll be resolved as per the Lebanese government, as per the Lebanese government's requests, meaning that they will abide by the line set by the Lebanese government. And pressure will be taken off foreign companies trying to explore for gas and oil in our fields, because we've had such rounds before. The energy giant Total has been in Lebanon before, and they went to, I believe, Block 9 near the south of Lebanon. It's one of the largest of the blocks. Mm-hmm. And and even though we were sure that there was oil and gas there, they were really late giving us the report back, and even when they did give it back, they said there was nothing there. So it was clear that there was a lot of political pressure being piled on Total so that they would give back such a faulty report to the Lebanese officials.
Okay.
So what we're hoping for is that this pressure would be taken off foreign companies so that we would begin exploring for gas and oil.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Firas, given all the points that we've raised so far in this show and discussed, and given the current circumstances, what's the possibility of a war?
I think it's very possible because the Zionists are very arrogant, and the United Nations never doing its job where it's supposed to broker peace deals and come down to resolutions and respect international law. Certain countries have, they have like immunity. They don't have to really follow the laws. So I think, infully, the Zionist regime will be taught a lesson by a certain military, advancement by Hezbollah, coordinated hopefully with the Lebanese government. And at that point, maybe they will not want to proceed into going into a major war. And knowing they know Hezbollah, they've tested them in 2006 and before that. In the war that was before that, when they liberated Lebanon, and they know that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah is a very credible man. He's got a very strong support base inside Lebanon, and at the same time, even the Zionist regime call him the al-adu al-sadiq in Arabic. It means the honest enemy. Mm-hmm. They know he's honest. They know he doesn't lie. He doesn't deceive. He doesn't manipulate like them. And that if he says something, he does it. So at the end of the day, they should be prepared for a war, and hopefully, we can avoid major wars and we can, claim sovereignty over the resources of the Lebanese country.
Hmm. Karim, we had this Mr. Frederick Hoff. He was a U.S. diplomat in charge of mediation between Israel and Lebanon between the years 2010 and 2012. And he proposed Lebanon to have 55% and to Israel to have 45% of the disputed area, which Beirut at that time did not accept. Was that a fair solution?
Of course that wasn't a fair solution, because if Lebanon was going to have 55%, well, the Israelis already have... look, the thing is, we're going back to square one with this, because if supposedly this would work, first of all, the American side could always pile pressure on the... on foreign oil and gas companies in order to have them constantly delay any work that they're doing. Mm. And so allowing the Israelis, who have already begun extraction, to use these 45% in order to extract whatever they can from the Lebanese side. I mean, they're already stealing our water. They're already stealing any natural resources that they have, that we have. So if we share this block, that means effectively that the Israelis will be able to use their already established facilities in order to drain whatever we have from our side. This, of course, isn't going to work. This is this was just a maneuver in order to get the Lebanese side to feel like they've been able to accomplish something, to claim some sort of victory. It was aimed to allow those in Lebanon who have certain doubts or who are not strong of heart to accept such a political resolution. But this wasn't going to, I mean, this wasn't going to come to pass. The Israelis, like I said, they would have drained us of anything we would have shared with them in that block, and they would have rendered that block, for all intents and purposes, ineffective for the Lebanese side. We wouldn't be able to explore anything.
Mm-hmm. Now, for us, given the plethora of economic woes and issues that Lebanon is already grappling with, how significant is the resolution of this maritime dispute?
Yeah, this Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said at this point, this is one of the most important economical resolutions and solutions for our nation right now, because the embargo is heavy, you know, and all these different countries that are collaborating with the U.S. and Israel are doing their own sanctions against Lebanon in different ways, and they're putting pressures on different politicians, different companies, you know, and they're even you know, telling their own citizens not to travel to Lebanon and so on. Making false claims as if it's a dangerous zone and so on. So it's a very difficult time right now economically for the Lebanese people. And it's a big test and trial, you know, for the Lebanese people and especially for the Lebanese politicians. And I think the only way forward right now is this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity of resources that can be used to bring in a good amount of, you know, funds and money and so on to help the people of Lebanon, and hopefully it'll be shared equally to all the Lebanese people inside Lebanon, you know, and won't go to like one side. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that if Hezbollah was able to, you know, secure these resources and the gas in the maritime, I think that it will be you know, shared equally inside Lebanon, because Hezbollah cares, the people of Lebanon does not care only about, you know, their people or their supporters or the Shias or so on. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has proven this, that he cares about all of Lebanon, and he's a patriotic person as well. He's a very principled man, cares about the whole region, cares about the security of the region, the sovereignty of the region, and the liberation of Palestine. And we see that consistently with his sacrifices. You know, he sacrificed his son fighting against the Zionist regime and fighting for his land and fighting for the Palestinian cause. Where do you find a leader these days that has sacrificed his son fighting the battle? You know, this is very rare. So we have to take all this into consideration.
Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Let me thank our guests. We had public analyst Karim Sharara in Qom, manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Firas Al-Najm in Toronto, with her comments and insight. And I've been your host, Behrouz Najafi. This is the end of this edition of The Spotlight.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
As 2,500 West Bank residents face expulsion by the Zionist regime. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Shatan Hamad, journalist. This article is published under the heading "The Palestinian Mothers of Masafer Yatta and the Fear of Displacement." Stay tuned for more. In the small kitchen of her home, threatened with demolition at any moment, Leila Mons was cooking rice and lamb stuffed zucchini in yogurt sauce, the smell of the traditional Palestinian dish filling the place. Meanwhile, her children gathered in the living area preparing to eat lunch. As Mons stirred the yogurt on the stove, all that was racing through her mind was the fate of her and her family, for the Israeli regime has started to implement its decision to demolish 12 Palestinian villages in Masafer Yatta, south of Al-Khalil, where some 2,500 residents live, in order to turn the area into a military training zone. The Israeli regime army had previously demolished part of her family home in the village of Jamba, but the expulsions faced by Masafer Yatta today are not aimed at demolishing one house here or there, but rather to uproot all the residents of the area. Women will be among the worst affected by the mass expulsions. Firstly, they are already a marginalized group lacking basic needs in the community, such as women-only clinics and training centers. Secondly, they bear responsibility for their families, a task that is increasingly difficult and complicated under the harsh conditions in Masafer Yatta, and especially in Jamba, where the Israeli regime occupation prevents the building of infrastructure or the paving of streets. As a result, residents are kept living in primitive conditions. Mons, 44, shared with Middle East Eye the details of her daily life as a mother and as a woman. She said, "As women, our life here is hard. We start our days very early by milking the sheep, then make bread on the fire. After that, we make breakfast for the children before they head to school, and during the day, there are many duties we have to carry out." Mons has 12 children, four of whom have finished or are completing their university studies. Yunus studied vet medicine, Halima speech and audiology, Batul studies education, Rayan studies Arabic. "The main goal of educating our children is to reinforce our presence here and develop our village, Jamba. It's not easy, but we are working on achieving it," she said. These mothers' concerns over their children start from the very first moments of their life. Mons, who constantly worries about her children, gave birth to her first child, Yunus, while being transported by tractor. Yunus survived miraculously, and I experienced the same suffering with each birth due to the difficulty of reaching the hospital and the presence of Israeli barriers that obstruct our movement, she said. These days, an additional concern preoccupies Mons. Jamba school, like the village's housing, is threatened with demolition, a threat that hangs over all schools in Masafer Yatta, even though they were established with the support and funding of the European Union, Mons said. "I'm worried about the fate of the children and their future. Where will they study if the schools are destroyed, and how will they achieve their dreams?" This great fear of displacement hanging over the people of Masafer Yatta only intensifies the feelings of anxiety and tension for the women of Jamba. Mons said, "I live with great anxiety. I feel that my throat is dry from the intensity of the fear we live in. We wait for the end of each day in order to feel that it has passed without us being displaced, and we prepare for a new day." All the women in Jamba feel this insecurity acutely. Two sisters, Fatima and Al-Jabarin, 58, and Halima Al-Jabarin, 52, talked to MEE as they prepared lunch for when their children returned from herding sheep. We mainly depend on grazing sheep, but the Israeli settlements and the army have come to surround us and prevent us from grazing freely, said Halima, adding, our children are constantly attacked by settlers and the army, which keeps us worried about them until they return. Fatemeh said that persecution by Israeli regime army extended into Jamba and into the homes of the residents. The settlers launch attacks on Jamba and the army constantly breaks into our homes and conducts military exercises between them, which puts residents in danger all the time, Fatemeh told MEE. Even at night, the women of Jamba live in a state of anxiety due to danger from quite a different direction. One recent night, Halima and Fatemeh, who live in adjacent houses, saw a rattlesnake nearby, considered one of the most venomous snakes in Palestine. Fatemeh said, I used to hear it whenever it moved. I could not sleep for fear it might bite one of my children. I stayed up late and checked on them all the time. Halima said that after the birth of her daughter, her only child, she would rarely leave her, and that she was constantly worried about the snakes and scorpions. Halima said, one time I found a dead scorpion near my daughter, I panicked. What if it had stung her? She is my only child and I am terrified of losing her. Fatemeh and Halima's preoccupations with their children's safety have led to them neglect their own health problems that have arisen as a result of their difficult living conditions. Both mothers suffer from breathing problems due to the dusty weather in Masafer Yatta, and Halima suffers from diabetes and high blood pressure. Halima said, women here may die before reaching the hospital. I sometimes suffer from high fluid levels in the lungs, and my life becomes in great danger. In June, Halima and Fatemeh lost their mother, Latifa Mahmoud Al-Jabarin, who was 95 years old. She died at the public hospital in Yatta, and neither Halima nor Fatemeh were able to be with her in her last moments. With the pain of their loss still all too present, they nevertheless must confront the continuing fragility of their own and their family's existence. There is real threat of our homes being demolished and of our displacement from Jamba and Masafer Yatta forever, said Halima, adding, we will not accept that and we will never leave our homes even if they demolish them on top of our heads. Her mother was one of the most prominent members of Jamba. She was the only midwife who helped the women there give birth, rescued them when necessary, and saved their children. With her death, Jamba lost one of its most important women. Fatemeh cried as she talked about her late mother. We learned steadfastness from our mother, who was one of the most powerful women and on whom the village depended greatly. Today, it is not just us who lost a mother, it is the whole village. Since her death, the women of Jamba have had to move to the homes of their families and friends in Yatta when their due date approached, so that they can be near to a hospital to save their lives and the lives of their offspring. They return a few days later with their children.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.